I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a quick follow-up on that story we talked about yesterday with the drag performance outside a local elementary school. Man, there's a lot of people on the internet who need their computers searched by the FBI. Plus, once again, we find ourselves in the unenviable position of having to do the legacy media's job for them. And state lawmakers undermining government transparency yet again. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. That's how our show is possible. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. Friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We have an in-depth segment that we're going to do about ICE arrest and deportation numbers. You're going to see a bunch of stories in the legacy news that are coming out over the next 24 to 48 hours talking about how Donald Trump is evil and he's just ripping people off the streets, except there's some selection going on from the mainstream media on what numbers they show you and which numbers they don't. So we'll dive into that. But first, I just have to follow up really quickly. Oh my God, help me. Lord Jesus in heaven, help me. So we did a story yesterday, right? We led the story with this weird drag show that happened outside an elementary school in Washington State in the Sumner Bonnie Lake School District. Showed you some of the photos that were captured by a woman named Dawn Land, who went there with the intent of recording what was going on at this Pride event. So it's like, you know, men in lingerie and there's children there, and I don't have to go over all of it, but it was clearly inappropriate. Like, there's no world in which, no argument that can be made where you can convince me that anyone, a male or female, drag or not drag, in lingerie around children is something that is about inclusion or love or anything. It's disgusting. I mean, we wouldn't have like a wet t-shirt contest outside a elementary school, would we? But no, because it's the alphabet mob. Everything's fine. Everything goes, right? So we do this story, and most of you are like, yeah, that's insane. Why would that ever be allowed? I was shocked, though. Shocked by the number of people who thought I was just pearl-clutching and that this isn't controversial at all. And the number one reason I saw this so much is because they said, Brandi, don't you know that that person is reenacting the Rocky Horror Picture Show? Like, which I haven't even seen, by the way. So no, I actually didn't know that. But if you look at the side-by-side, it's pretty clear. But these were the comments that were all over social media. It's the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Y'all will be so dramatic about everything, I swear. Get a life. Rocky Horror is like a cult classic from the 80s. Jesus Christ. Why would you say people are sick for supporting this? You have absolutely no idea where that costume came from. There is an entire generation that absolutely loved the Rocky Horror Picture Show. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of comments like that across my social media pages. First of all, when this guy says there's an entire generation that absolutely loved the Rocky Horror Picture Show, yeah, is it the five-year-old? Is it the five-year-old or the toddler in the stroller? Which generation is it that would appreciate that this drag performer in lingerie was reenacting a show from your youth? So a couple things about this really quick. I mean, you guys are probably like, that's the dumbest argument, but it was so widespread. I don't care if it's a movie. Worth noting that that movie is rated R, so a kid wouldn't have been able to get into that movie back in the day.
And I did know that. As soon as I saw it, I knew that's what it was from, but it didn't matter.
No, it doesn't. Okay. Oh, all right, here.
That was The Little Mermaid.
Right. So let's just play this through, right? Hypothetical. Okay, so if any movie, if it's appropriate to reenact any movie at all, because it's a movie, right? So the nature of that movie and the nature of the reenactment doesn't matter. Kids can watch any reenactment at an elementary school as long as it's a movie. All right. Let's have, you know, some adults go in and reenact American Pie, the scene where he sticks his pee-pee in an apple pie for gratification. Let's reenact that. Let's reenact Sharon Stone, the interrogation scene from Basic Instinct. Nothing wrong with that. It's a movie, right? let's reenact Game of Thrones and all the brutal sex scenes when she's married to that one gigantic, very handsome man. Or the Red Wedding scene. Let's have a bunch of adults trot in and have their throats slit in front of little children. Because it's a movie, right? I mean, how stupid. How stupid of an argument is that? Brandy, it's a movie. It's okay. No, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. And we're not going to feed into that anymore. It's not. It's not okay in no context. And I would feel the same way if outside of an elementary school, you set up bouncy houses and art tables and then had a bunch of women in little tiny bikinis march in for a bikini contest. It's sick stuff, and you are sick if you look at that and think that's perfectly fine to have around children. Rocky Horror Picture Show, be damned. Maybe I should watch the movie. People seem to like it.
I can't believe you haven't
but
seen that,
But you know
actually.
The benefit? I'm an adult. Hmm. I could watch that movie, and it would be perfectly appropriate. Mm-hmm. Just people have really lost their minds. They will find a way to justify anything. And people on the internet were also telling me, like, Brandy, don't ask, like, why schools and adults, like, allow this and parents allow this. Ask why these performers want an audience with children. Mm-hmm. Right? Why? This person apparently who was reenacting the Rocky Horror Picture Show, apparently this is like a part of a actual performance that he's in, right? And couldn't you find other places to like reenact it that aren't in front of children? I guess I just really don't understand. Why do you want an audience with children at a event for children? It's very strange. I do want to update that we did get a statement back from the Sumner Bonnie Lake School District. I bet they were pretty inundated yesterday because I know libs of TikTok shared this. So a few questions we asked them and their response. So were you aware of this event taking place? They said, we were aware that an event titled Plateau Pride was going to take place during the summer when school is not in session. This was not a school district event. Okay. That's fine, but you don't have any standards for events that take place on school property? None at all? It's like, why don't we just have a porn convention? Yeah, why don't we have a porno convention or something in the parking lot? Really test the limits of what you're willing to allow on taxpayer-funded grounds. Who okayed this event? They say the district approved the facility rental request. Approval of a rental does not mean the district endorses or approves the event itself. Events held outside of school hours by outside organizers are not district sponsored. Then don't have it at a school. Make them do it somewhere else. You can only distance yourself from it so much when you approved it and provided the space. We asked, does the school support the activities that occurred in these pictures and videos? They said, when school facilities are not in use for school programs, we make them available for rent to community organizations. The district provides access to these spaces without endorsing or opposing the views or activities of any group that rents them. Okay, let's do a KKK convention. Let's set up a cross, light it on fire, and let the people with hoods gather around it. Like, it's like, so you have to have some standard. You have to have some standard. And then we asked about the representation of the Democratic Party at this event. Is there a policy regarding political parties participating in and or hosting events on school property? They said there's a school board policy that allows community organizations, including political groups, to rent school facilities as long as the events are generally open to the public and meet the policy's guidelines. This includes educational, cultural, political, and recreational activities. The district does not endorse or oppose any group that rents its facilities. I'd like to see if there's some examples of them renting to, like, Republican mm-hmm. or conservative events or a church group or something. And maybe they do. That's fine. But as a taxpayer, and certainly for taxpayers in this school district, I think you're getting into pretty murky territory. Like, I get it. This is a public space, essentially. It is paid for by the public. So I don't think that we should prohibit the public from using it during the summer months as like a community gathering space. But you have to have some reasonable guardrails on that. Like the examples I gave. I'm sorry, but you wouldn't allow and shouldn't allow a KKK rally. You're going to let the Proud Boys roll up? Probably not, right? And I'm not comparing a drag show to the KKK. But when we talk about people lacking a moral compass, adults and adult men parading around little children in lingerie, you know, it's pretty low on the moral totem pole. So these aren't acceptable answers from the Sumner Bonnie Lake School District. So we'll have a few follow-ups for them. And if anything profound comes out of it, we'll let you know. But yeah, please, please spare me the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I get it. doesn't mean that it needs to be reenacted in front of children. Okay, gotcha. All right, once again, we need to do the legacy media's job for it. So I wanted to just make sure you guys are aware that a lot of these stories are going to be coming out. And so I want you to do what we always want you to do, is to gather information, seek information from different sources, and to make your mind up based on your own research about what's really going on here. So there are a bunch of reports out from mostly like left-wing forms of higher education that are coming out looking at ICE data. So like UCLA has done some research on this. An entity called the Deportation Data Project has done some research on this. And they're putting out pretty regular updates about ICE arrests across the country and also deportations, what kind of people, you know, where they're being deported to, whether they have criminal convictions besides or wanted for crimes besides just immigration offenses, et cetera. So all of this is being pushed out now. And so as a result, you're going to start to see a ton of news stories about it, where they're looking at this data, they're writing a news story about the data, and they're putting it out there. The question is, are they doing their own research into the data? Are they making sure that the data is complete and paints an accurate picture? Well, if you're the Seattle Times, the answer is no. So the Seattle Times did this long story, bunch of graphics, bunch of information based on the information being put out by the Deportation Data Project. Their headline, "Data shows how Trump has changed Washington immigration enforcement." I'll read just the first couple graphs for you. It says, "Since President Donald Trump took office, promising mass deportations, many have been trying to assess exactly how dramatically immigration enforcement has changed in Washington state. Yes, immigration authorities have raided at least two work sites, smashed car windows, roamed immigration court hallways, and detained people suddenly summoned to the Department of Homeland Security's Tukwila office building. But little has been known about whether the number of arrests and detentions in the state has ramped up as much as Immigration and Customs Enforcement's aggressive tactics. Recently released data from the Deportation Data Project, collected through Freedom of Information requests by the University of California, provides answers. The data shows immigration enforcement has indeed scaled up in Washington. Arrests have climbed, most sharply in June, but not as much as they have nationwide. Most of those arrested in Washington and nationwide do not have a criminal record." So those graphs tell you how the Seattle Times is going to spin this data. That, oh my gosh, you know, we're seeing this aggressive, their word, aggressive ICE enforcement actions happening out in our communities. But, you know, what does the data show? Well, the data shows that absolutely it has ramped up. Things are popping off under President Donald Trump. And that's what they proceed to go through. So they have a couple charts that they put together. Again, all of this is based off the data from this project. It's a lefty project. We'll get to that in a second. So one of their graphs is this one. ICE arrests in Washington and the United States. So I'm more interested, because we're in Washington state and I can really dig deep into this data, in the graph on the left. So it says the monthly number of immigration and customs enforcement arrests has risen in Washington and the U.S. since President Donald Trump took office again in January. So on both of these charts, so it has Washington state numbers and numbers in the United States, and you'll see that it goes from September 2023 to June of this year. So that's the data set that they're including, September 2023 to June of this year. And you'll see on the Washington graph at both ends, kind of a spike here. If we take a closer look, just so you can kind of make sense of the data. So I'm going to use blue for Biden and red for Trump, just to make things a little easier. So they start this graph at September of 2023. And if you look at it, there's this big spike right at that moment. And then the spike is coming down pretty dramatically. And then they end it with this massive spike happening right now under Trump. So when it starts in September 2023, that's during the Biden administration, in that month, there were 202 ICE arrests in Washington state, according to this chart, okay? So you compare that now in June to 277, you would say, well, wow, look at that. There's way more happening in just the, you know, 6 months in to the Trump term. All right, so keep your... I know what you're already thinking, because you guys are smart and you see the problem with this, just like I see the problem with it, but just wait a second. Let's take a look at a second chart that they have. So this says percentage of people with no criminal record arrested by ICE increases in Washington state. So again, it has the data set from September of 2023 to June of this year. And it has broken it down by percentage for each month between those two points in time, the percentage of people arrested by ICE who had some sort of criminal conviction or pending criminal charge, and then no criminal record. And if we break that down, let me just sort of highlight a couple key areas. So remember the last graph I showed you where it was spikes at the beginning and the end. So take a look here. So let's look at the areas around those spikes. So September 2023, that's where it begins. But look at the percentage of these ICE arrests under Biden during that month that had criminal convictions. Almost none. Only 14% during that period. During that month had criminal convictions. 85% had no criminal record. So that chunk of time there, fall of 2023 to the end of 2023, the Biden administration is carrying out ICE arrests against mostly people who have no criminal record. They just are in the country illegally. So then you compare that to January 2025 to current in June, and Trump hasn't even met that number yet. So for instance, June, which is that big spike you saw in arrests, 31% had criminal convictions, 57% had no criminal record. So you might look at that, and if you read the media and everything, like right now, they're suggesting, and didn't that Seattle Times article, that Trump is out there basically rounding up people who are, their only crime is coming into the country illegally. And it's true that more people being arrested by ICE in June of 2025 under the Trump administration did not have an actual criminal conviction or criminal record. But again, you look at September 2023, much worse under Biden there. Only 14% had a criminal conviction. 85% had no criminal record, right? So you guys are already going to kind of see the problem here and the selective data. But I want to put those side by side before we dive into it. Why do you think they're starting this at September 2023? Why do you think that's where the data starts and they don't go back further? Especially when you're seeing in the chart about Washington State and ICE arrests, you're seeing that that was during a period where there was a big spike going on. And it seems that they've cut off the first half of that spike, doesn't it? That they started at a time when it was starting to go down under Biden, when ICE arrests were starting to decline under Biden. Because a big spike like that, what's on the other side of that spike? Are they hiding something from us? And then similar with the number of arrests that ICE is carrying out and whether people have criminal records. You see, the worst time for Biden, if you consider deporting people who just came across the border illegally, bad, I guess, in September 2023, 14%, only 14% of ICE arrests during that period of the Biden administration had criminal convictions. And that's sort of a trend. So why would they cut it off right there? What happened before that? What happened in August and July and June? So if you saw that like I did, your spidey senses were probably going off. Have they selected the most kind of opportune period of time to be able to make the Trump administration look bad? Now, an innocent explanation might be that they took these numbers from the Deportation Data Project. And the Deportation Data Project says it has obtained a new release of nationwide individual level Immigration and Customs Enforcement ICE data, now covering the period from September 1st, 2023 to June 26th, 2025. So this is the data this deportation project looked at. And of course, they're out of, you know, California higher ed. So maybe the Seattle Times is just lazy. That's, I think, the most innocent explanation is they actually didn't, they just took the data that this Deportation Data Project compiled for them, and they didn't have the time or the energy or didn't really care to look back any further to understand, hey, why are those spikes? Why are those spikes? Why are we cutting off data at those spikes? So why don't we do that? Why don't we do that for them, okay? Let's see what was going on pre-2023, pre-September 2023, okay? So we already know those two peaks that they included in their reporting. June of 2025, 277 Washington State ICE arrests under President Donald Trump. In September of 2023, 202 Wah State ICE arrests under Biden. That's the information that they showed you, right? So you would say, oh, things are much worse under Trump right now than they were in September 2023 under Biden. But when we look back at publicly available data that ICE publishes on its website, here's what you would have seen if the Seattle Times didn't start that graph right at the tail end of a spike under the Biden administration. In August of 2023, this is for Washington State, or rather the Seattle sector for ICE, 259 arrests. So it was even higher. July 2023, 267 arrests. June 2023, 298 arrests. So now we have a single month that's even higher than this spike we're seeing under Trump right now. But for some reason, they chose to cut off their data to start after that period of time. May 2023, 293 arrests, also higher than the 277 under Trump. April 2023, 386 arrests. March 2023, 413 arrests. In fact, for almost the entirety of 2023, per month, ICE arrests in the Seattle area of ICE, the Seattle sector for ICE, under Biden, monthly, it was higher, in some cases much higher, than the spike that we're seeing under President Donald Trump right now. But you don't know any of that if you read the mainstream news, if you read the Seattle Times, if you read the data that was collected by the Deportation Data Project, because they cut all of that out and started after a spike was already cresting for Biden. Now, do you think they did that innocently? Because had you just extended the charts a couple months in the other direction, you would have seen that the spike was higher under Biden than it was under Trump. So do you think that's innocent? I don't know. I know the legacy media enough to know that if they saw that data, they probably made a decision not to publish it. And if you go even further back during Biden's time in office, you would see there are months that are far greater for ICE arrests than what's happening right now under President Donald Trump. For instance, 2021, let's go, June of 2021 was one of the biggest spikes I could find. 527 in 1 month. Now, I want to make one sort of note that the ICE data goes by areas of responsibility, AORs. So this is the Seattle area of responsibility, which includes, as you can see, Oregon. And we're not clear on whether the Seattle Times bifurcated Washington State from Oregon, or whether it just said this is Washington State, but it was the Seattle area of responsibility. But as I'm comparing the data back in the charts, Seattle Times with what ICE has, if it's different, it's only by a few arrests. It's not by very much. But this is under Biden, June of 2021, in the Seattle area of responsibility for ICE, 527 arrests. If they had charted that, that spike would have gone off the chart compared to where this spike is under Trump. And then if you look at the, if you're watching the show, there's a graph that's orange and blue on the right side. And what that is the blue is criminal convictions. The orange is other immigration violators. So the orange is of those 527, almost all of them were people arrested by ICE who didn't have any criminal convictions. And isn't that what they're screeching about under President Donald Trump right now? And only a small percentage of the ICE arrests under Biden during June of 2021 in the Seattle area of responsibility for ICE, only a small percentage were arrests of people with criminal convictions. Is this not what they are screeching about right now under President Trump? Well, it's not. It's actually much worse. If you're mad about ICE arrests, and you're mad that ICE arrests appear to be favoring people who only have immigration violations and not criminal violations, why weren't you screeching in June of 2021? When arrests here were through the roof of people. And I'm actually kind of embarrassed for Trump having looked at this data. Turns out Biden was doing better than him. Turns out under Biden, at certain periods of time, ICE was actually arresting far more people. including more people who were just here on immigration violations, at least in Washington state. And this took almost no time at all, a couple hours before the show, to look at those initial graphs from the Seattle Times and to say, man, that's awful suspicious that they're starting their data set when it appears that a spike is just coming down from Biden. And anyone with half a brain would look at that and say, let's look at the month before that, and the month before that, and the month before that. Let's see if this horrible, awful spike we're seeing under President Trump was matched at any period of time by President Biden. It wasn't just matched, it was exceeded exponentially. And look, will Trump get there? I'm sure. I think Trump is only ramping up. I'm sure we're going to see numbers in the 500 or so arrests in Washington state per month. We're only 6 months in. But if you're screeching about it under President Trump, because it's that horrible, awful, oh my God, we're ripping people off the streets who don't have criminal convictions. If you're truly mad because you think it's wrong, well, where were you in 2023 in the summer months? Where were you in the summer of 2021 when far more people in our state were being arrested by immigration and customs enforcement than they are right now? Now, I think the reason people weren't screeching about it back then is pretty clear, because they didn't realize. Why didn't they realize? Because outlets like the Seattle Times didn't care to report on it. They're only reporting on it right now because it's all political. Because orange man bad, orange man evil, orange man racist. And so you have this collective groupthink, and oh my gosh, the numbers must be horrible under Donald Trump. Look at everything that's going on. So they're pushing a narrative. And I think reporting on it now is just fine. This is a promise Trump has made. He's made a very big deal about going out and rounding people up and sending deporting people from the country. It's journalistic to look at where are the numbers. How many people are being arrested in our state and other states and across the country? How many of them have criminal convictions, et cetera, et cetera? That's journalism. That's fine. It's when you're selective about it, though. It's when you didn't do it for Biden, when you should have. It's when you select a piece of data that will allow you to keep pushing the narrative you want to push, because God forbid if you went back a few other months during the Biden administration, it would have told a completely different story. So there's really only two options for the Seattle Times here. The two options are they're lazy and they just took the data that this project put out and they just said, hey, here's what's going on. They're either lazy or they knew what the data showed if they went back a few months and they decided that it didn't fit the political narrative. If they were to show their readers in Seattle that far more people were being arrested here by ICE per month in 2023 under the Biden administration, going back to 2021. So are you just as mad at Biden now? You should be. If you're not, then you're a hypocrite. And meanwhile, where are we seeing most of the sort of angst, right? I thought there was a really interesting, actually, can we show this first, Nicole? There was a really interesting map that they showed that actually kind of surprised me, honestly, in this deportation data project. And it's kind of color-coded, and it has arrests per 1,000 non-citizen residents. And this is for that same period of time that they've been focusing on. So this is February, well, this is February to early June of 2025. So this is just under the Trump administration from February to June. And the darker the red, the more arrests that are happening. The lighter, so the yellow, the light yellow, the fewer arrests that are happening by ICE under Trump. What do you notice? The West Coast has some of the lowest numbers of arrests of non-citizens under Trump. But where do you hear the most screeching from? The West Coast. Look at that. The numbers are incredibly low in Washington, Oregon, California, even in New York. The high numbers, they're in the Deep South, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas. Now, there's a couple reasons for this, I think. I don't believe we have smaller numbers of illegals. No, I think it's easier for them to hide here. I think our state policies have made it, because of sanctuary policies, that it's really easy to sort of blend in with U.S. citizens here. And they don't cooperate with ICE. So you don't have local police handing over illegals to ICE. So I think that's a big part of this. And then in the Deep South and the red states, they're like, oh, Trump wants help rounding people up. By all means, let's do it. But isn't that fascinating? That you, if you watch the news or read the Times, you would believe that ICE is arresting like thousands of people a day here. It's just not happening. We have some of the lowest arrest rates for ICE in the entire country. It's wild. And then you get people like Katie Wilson, who might be the next mayor of Seattle after the results of Tuesday's election. And of course, one of her key talking points, despite these low, low, low arrest rates, is we got to fight back against ICE.
I think we need to be really active at like challenging what ICE is doing on every front we can. And obviously being ready in the case of Trump trying to call in the National Guard or whatever, federalized National Guard, be ready with those lawsuits and challenging that as much as possible. And we can, you know, learn from what's happened in California on that front, obviously.
Wait, it's not a surprise. Because, of course, in the West Coast, they're going to focus on anything that means they don't have to focus on the actual crises here. Homelessness, crime, affordability, substance abuse, all of the crises they created that they can't blame on Trump. We can't focus on that. So let's create this big whole production around ICE when we have some of the lowest ICE arrest rates in the entire country, because that's what people want to hear. And then, you know, we can just say Trump's to blame for everything and distract people from what's actually going on. And then, you know, at the same time, we do have the federal government talking quite a bit about sanctuary jurisdictions in states like ours and states like Oregon, and saying that they are going to ramp up. I mean, they've been saying they're going to ramp up enforcement in sanctuary jurisdictions. So maybe our states won't be this light yellow for very long. Maybe soon we'll be deep red. Tom Homan was talked about this quite a bit, talked about it again yesterday.
Is the administration considering any federal action in Portland, where we see Antifa besieged one of the buildings there for over a month now and assaulting and attacking journalists on the ground?
We'll see about that. I'm going to Portland.
Yeah, he's going to Portland. You keep saying you're going to Portland. We haven't seen you yet. And he also says that he's going to Seattle. But so there's a ton of focus and obsession and energy on what's happening in these sanctuary jurisdictions where ICE arrest rates are actually pretty low and where they were much higher under Biden at many points in time during the Biden administration. And as I said, I actually think that that's not great for Trump. You know, Biden was doing it. Trump is doing it, but he's talking about it quite a bit. So maybe it's more noticeable and maybe their tactics are different. You know, like they said, they're going into immigration courts and a lot of what they're doing is very, very public. But you're either mad about ICE arrests or you're not. You're either mad about ICE arresting people with no criminal convictions or you're not. And if you're mad about it because it's happening right now, then you really ought to do some introspection, because you should have been mad about it when it was happening in 2023, 2022, 2021. And I don't expect individual citizens have been going to the ICE database and looking this stuff up. It really is a failure of the media. So you should be mad at the media for pulling the wool out over your eyes for so many years and then manipulating the data now in the present day to make President Donald Trump look horrible and evil and mean. Just wild stuff. All right, coming up next, state lawmakers are undermining transparency yet again. I just don't even know how this is lawful. We'll talk about it. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. We all need insurance. Why handle it yourself when someone else can handle it for you? First Mark Insurance can take a look at your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs. Maybe you have some changes happening in your life, and then they'll go out. They'll shop the market of their carriers for you, come back with their recommendations. We hear from so many undivided viewers and listeners who have saved thousands of dollars a year by taking the First Mark Challenge. You know, whether it's saving money on their home or auto. We even had a guy who saved money using First Mark for his pet insurance, like hundreds of dollars. I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that they would help with that, but they do. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. And the very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. All right. Apparently state lawmakers are now going to be able to delete records either immediately or after 30 days. Either way, it's horrifying. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. start by saying this is not a surprise. State lawmakers have been undermining the public and transparency efforts for a long time, and including Republicans. You go back 6-7 years, Republicans were complicit in this too. But then Republicans fell out of power, and maybe they didn't feel a need to continue to try to hide their records. I don't know. But now it's strictly a Democratic issue. It really is. You had the Democratic leadership in the legislature that were exerting something called legislative privilege, which was just sort of this manufactured concept. You know, they've tried to, you know, they've taken media entities to court and battled them in court just so they don't have to show their records. And it's all very shady stuff. Because at the end of the day, you work for us. We pay your salary. You're elected by people to go and serve the citizens of Washington State. So what do you have to hide? Of course, it's, you know, all the work they do for special interests and unions and all of that stuff. But it's not a surprise that it keeps getting worse, because the courts really have not put a check on the legislature. You have these highly ideological judges up to and including the Washington State Supreme Court, and they are consistently siding with state lawmakers and essentially allowing them to delete, to hide records from members of the media. This has been something that I will give the mainstream news credit on, because they are nothing if not self-serving. The mainstream news has been, I think, very vigorous in calling out state lawmakers for doing this, including Shauna Sowersbury, who has done a ton of work on this. There's an article in the Seattle Times that she wrote, "White House lawmakers get okay to auto-delete records after 30 days. So I'll just read a little bit of this for you. A new policy issued last week allows lawmakers in the State House to auto-delete records within 30 days, reversing a move made amid a lawsuit that alleged legislators were illegally excluding themselves from the State Public Records Act. An email provided to the Seattle Times notified Democrats and Republicans a week before the change took place on July 30th and provides guidelines that most emails can be deleted immediately. A small subset must be kept longer. Under the directive, only prime sponsors of legislation are required to retain emails sent to or from their office regarding those bills. If a member is not the main sponsor, those emails are considered transitory and therefore can be deleted as soon as the member no longer needs or wants them. The policy changes means that communications about legislation, including emails among lawmakers and from lobbyists, could be gone for good, reducing the public and the media's ability to see how laws are made." First of all, there is so much of this that's insane. I don't even know how this is lawful to do. I've been doing public records requests for 15 years. I used to do like 5 a week some weeks. And often when a story comes to you, typically as a tip from someone who knows about the existence of an email for whatever reason. So they know about the existence of the email, but they want you to get it via a public records request so they don't have to provide it, so it doesn't come back to them. That's very common. But typically when it happens, it's more than 30 days after the email was sent. Very rarely are you alerted to something that happened scandalous, like the day it goes on, hey, file a public records request for this. This is going to eliminate the ability to do so many of the actual pieces of journalism that you see out there that look back at, like, I think of the WashDot whistleblower case. And so many of these things where you might have someone who comes out, you know, after they retire or a few months down the road. We did a lot of this on the vaccine mandates. We are going back in time and you're trying to piece together what happened here. What were the negotiations leading up to these decisions? What were the negotiations leading up to these bills? Who was in the, who had the ear of lawmakers? What lobbyists? What unions? So to just say that for most people, yeah, throw them in your deleted email box and then it'll auto-delete after 30 days, never to be seen again, is insane. And I'll get to more on this notion that the only emails that matter that have to be kept longer are the prime sponsors of bills. I'll get to more on that in a second. But here is the email that House Public Records sent to Democratic and Republican lawmakers explaining this. They say it's a space issue. Like, can't keep all this stuff forever, right? They wrote, if a member office does not use the double delete function, meaning the email is deleted and then deleted again from the deleted items folder, the emails remain indefinitely in the deleted box. This has created a backlog of emails that are intended to be deleted. Our email server storage is currently holding a massive amount of data that can be disposed. They said to resolve this issue, member offices deleted mailboxes will have the 30 days auto delete for emails moved to the deleted items folder. Once this is on, the deleted mailbox will automatically permanently delete after 30 days. Now, I don't think any of that is acceptable for the record. This idea that you could even move something to a deleted box. I get it. I think everything should be moved to storage. I don't believe you should be able to, as a state lawmaker, even freaking use the delete button. I think we should pry it off of people's keyboards. Shouldn't be able to delete shit. But it's like you shouldn't, even if it's an auto-delete, just putting it in your trash of your email. No, it should go to a server. For, I don't know, let's think of a reasonable period of time. What, 5 years, 10 years? I would say probably 10. So you can go back. I mean, look at the Climate Commitment Act and all the grifting we found around that. To be able to go back to 2014 when they were first considering it and look at everything that they said at the time, there was a lot of information from 2014 that came out and helped disprove Governor Jay Inslee saying that, oh, the CCA won't raise gas prices, when his own staff was saying back in 2014 that it would. So I think 10 years before anything can be deleted. But now you tell me after 30 days, it's an auto-delete?
And because of space, give me a break.
Because of space, give me a break.
My Hotmail's still hanging on to 30-year-old emails.
Yeah. No, you got space. And you know what? The citizens will pay for more storage. Happily. The citizens will pay for more storage. You guys can pay for laser hair removal for transgender inmates. We'd like to pay for more storage so we can keep the emails and see the emails about who made the decision to pay for laser hair removal for transgender inmates. Joan Mell, who's great, we've had her on the show before. She's an attorney for the Washington Coalition for Open Government. She's quoted in the Seattle Times article about this prime sponsor issue, which is so bizarre to me. She said, if the primary sponsor was all it took to get legislation passed, then I guess their communications would be the only important ones, but they're not. Bills get amended, and those amendments mean something, and they come from somewhere, and they're intended to do something for somebody. And that really is the point here. When you look at the prime sponsor of a bill, someone might be the prime sponsor, meaning their name is on the bill first, right? But then you have other lawmakers who jump on board as well. You can't pass a bill with just one vote. So you have emails going back and forth between other lawmakers, trying to get them on board, trying to convince them to vote. And you're saying all that is transitory because they're not the prime sponsor of the bill? As Joan said, if it just took one state lawmaker to get a bill passed, then okay, maybe we're looking at a different situation. But being the prime sponsor does not mean you're the only one behind the scenes sending emails to and fro about the bill and about the legislation. They just want to hide who they're talking to. I mean, 30 days doesn't even get us through a legislative session. So you've got a 3-month, 4-month legislative session. So you're telling me that we could be halfway through the legislative session and you'll have already deleted emails about the bills that you are still actively debating on the floor? It's insane, but there's no incentive for them to be transparent because of one-party rule and because they control the judicial branch as well. I mean, they've installed, essentially, all the judges. The state Supreme Court has made some insane rulings around public records that help state lawmakers keep secrets from the public. So as far as state lawmakers are concerned, they're like, why would I have to air my dirty laundry out if we could just change the rules and get around it? So I just can't imagine, as a reporter who talks extensively about the legislative session, going back to look for records, you know, in February of the session, oh, hey, I want to go back to look for emails that were being passed around in January when the session started about this bill and how it came to be. And then I'm told, oh, those are all gone. So I don't know if this is going to lead to a lawsuit. You know, members of the media organizations and the Washington Coalition for Open Government have challenged and sued in the past. I don't see why this would be any different because it really is truly just an asinine decision. But the party in power gets to do essentially whatever the party in power wants to do. It's really, really wild. All right. We'll get to national news and our segment Florida Report coming up next. First, we're all working towards retirement, right? And you all have your dream retirement plan for Mike and I. I, we're going to, you know, have some land, disappear, not talk to people unless we really want to, except you guys, of course. Then maybe a small apartment somewhere in Florida where it's nice and sunny. And you all have to make sure you have enough money to make those retirement dreams a reality. So that means properly protecting your retirement portfolio against risk. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in that. So reach out to Zach Abraham for a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Say, hey, Brandy told me to reach out to you, and he'll look over it. He'll give you his honest opinion and assessment of your allocations and all of that. He'll also do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities, I mean constantly, to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. Man, imagine if you planned for your dream retirement and you actually had more money than you needed for it. Wouldn't that be great? You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion on your portfolio's efficiency. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Don't put it off. knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. It is Thursday when we get a chance to escape the insanity of a place like Washington State and go all the way to the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Oh, I'm so excited. I get to see you soon. I think we've told viewers this. I'm taking a vacation with my family coming up at the end of August. My mom and my sister and I were going to Europe for the first time. So very excited about that. It's just going to be here before we know it. But we still have a few editions of Florida Report before that happens. So it looks like the second alligator Alcatraz is going to be moving forward. Are they calling it the same thing?
No, they're calling it the North Detention Facility, but I'm sure once it opens up, they'll come up with another clever name for it to make it sound scary.
Where is it going to be?
So this is at a National Guard training facility called Fort Blanding, and it's just south of Jacksonville, southwest of Jacksonville.
Gotcha. Because we had said on the show before, DeSantis was asked if he was going to open a second one. He said only if there's need for it, so that tells me that Alligator Alcatraz is getting full.
Yeah, and I think what I had heard him say is not only is it filling up, but the deportations are going a little slower than planned too. So until the federal government kind of ramps up their processing and gets people sent back to where they're supposed to be, they're going to fill up a lot quicker than anticipated. So they've already written out at least one contract to move forward with this new facility.
Gotcha. Okay. And it sounds like also because of where it is and what it is, it might not have some of the same, I don't know. I mean, people are going to hate it regardless. It doesn't matter if it's in the middle of the Everglades around alligators or not. But there's a couple lawsuits that have been filed against Alligator Alcatraz specific to it being in the Everglades.
Yeah. I mean, the main reason that the original airport project got canceled was for environmental reasons. They did the studies, they did the research, and they realized this is not a place for people to build anything. It's detrimental to the health of the entire state. And I think they did move into this process very quickly, and I don't think the environmental implications were at the top of their mind when they decided to take over and start adding, you know, temporary facilities. If you see some of the newer aerial images of Alligator Alcatraz, it does look like they add a little asphalt or concrete to create some pretty rough looking side roads and stuff. So I think that they did do a little extra construction on top of what was already there. And that has a lot of environmental groups and the Miccosukee Tribe of Indians a little bit peeved off over the whole thing. So they filed a lawsuit to try to at least halt any newer construction until it's made clear whether or not they're violating any environmental protection laws.
Yeah, so it's the Indian tribe, and then it's like this environmental group called like the Friends of the Everglades, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, the Friends of the Everglades. And they're basically just saying that they ignored an Environmental Policy Act that's already in place. It didn't even allow the public to have, you know, opinions about the matter and to make sure they're not violating anything because they moved so quickly. So on the other hand, Miami officials, because this lawsuit was filed in Miami. Miami officials are asking the judge to move, either dismiss the case or move the case to Collier County, which is where the facility is actually located at. So yeah. I'm sure there'll be some a little bit of a circus trying to figure out where that's going to go before any decisions are made.
Do you know off the top of your head, is Collier County more conservative? I'm not familiar with where that is.
It's the west coast of the state, and okay. I do believe it is less conservative. Yeah, that is a big retirement community on the west side of the state. You have Fort Myers, Naples, et cetera. So that's a lot of transplants, a lot of people coming from northern states, and they usually bring a little more of a blue attitude.
I wonder why they'd want to move it there then, because Miami has been going more and more red. I don't know if it's like the best venue for the state to fight something like that, but.
Well, I think it's because the people in Miami agree with Alligator Alcatraz and they don't want to stop anything. So they also just don't want to deal with it. But even though Miami-Dade County owns the facility, it is located in their county. So it's technically, I think, where it's supposed to, the jurisdiction would be over there.
Gotcha. Okay. So speaking of the Everglades, we always do some, it's been a while actually since we've done some crazy Florida animal story. So the Burmese python in Florida is invasive, right? Like those shouldn't be in the Everglades or anywhere in Florida. So they're always coming up with ways to try to hunt them down and kill them. And, you know, they make like a sport out of it or whatever. This is a very unique way to do it.
Yeah, so they have already deployed robotic rabbits into the Everglades. Basically, these rabbits are really cute stuffed animal rabbits that have had the stuffing removed, and a little drone robot rabbit has been placed in there that it not only emits heat, like the same body temperature as a rabbit, it also emits the same scent that would attract these pythons. And they're, you know, remote controlled. So there's people controlling where these rabbits go, and they have cameras, so when they pick up the recording of a python stalking it, hunting it, or eating it, it'll allow snake wranglers to go out there and get them.
I mean, the snake is going to eat the robot. They know that, right?
They know that because in the past, they've actually tagged other prey animals like raccoons, opossums, and rabbits, and then just tracked them down after they were eaten.
Right.
So now I think, you know, rather than offering up some of these now almost extinct animals because the pythons are eating all the raccoons, all the opossums, all the rabbits, they're deploying these robotic rabbits in lieu of sacrificing the small percentage of those animals that are left over.
Well, hopefully you can just slice that thing's belly open and take the robot out and it's still good.
I would hope so. I mean, it's kind of funny because there's only, I think they've released 40 of them so far, and they were putting out numbers of even people, if you put a person on the ground to go look for pythons, they might find one in every 8 hours. Mm-hmm. But when they do techniques like this, they're capturing a lot more frequently.
Yeah.
So I love the idea of robot rabbits patrolling the Everglades looking for invasive pythons.
Well, we all know you're a rabbit lover and have a rabbit in your home. And so I'm sure that it makes you happy that they're not sending out real rabbits, because they used to put them in, they used to lure them. They put rabbits in cages and then would go, like, basically the snakes were going to be around the cages, essentially. But someone would have to go out constantly and feed the rabbits, obviously, because you've locked them in a cage in the Everglades.
Yeah.
So now they don't have that, like, manpower dedicated to having to go take care of rabbits that they put in cages. Can you imagine how scared those rabbits were, too?
I know, because they didn't know that they're not going to get eaten. They're just, like, basically face-to-face with the beast for, they said a python would linger for up to an hour around these cages, so it would give them time to get out there and collect them. But I was so bummed out. I was glad that they were in cages and being cared for, but still, the poor thing's heart was probably...
That's horrible. It's awful. All right, Miranda, good stuff. We appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Can you imagine your job being, hey, what do you do for a living? Oh, I operate a remote control rabbit and wait for a python to eat me in the Florida Everglades, and then we go out and get it. That would be a cool job, actually. That sounds like something I would do if it weren't for the involvement of a python. So just the rabbit part, I guess. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll, which I'm so surprised the results of this are so lopsided, I guess. First, if you're interested in housing policy in the state of Washington, you do not want to miss the year's best housing conference. It's happening at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue, October 22nd to October 23rd. It's called Engage. It is being put on by our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. I will be there again this year. I'll be on a panel with my friend Jonathan Cho talking about how the media covers as housing and things like rent control. Hint, they do a terrible job. So it should be a fun panel. So if you guys can go to the conference, make sure that you attend that panel so I can also see you while I'm there. And while you are signing up for Engage, make sure you become a member of RHA. If you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, they can help you navigate the complex world of housing policy, make sure that you're doing everything above board. And, you know, in sticky situations like, oh, I've had a tenant living in my house for a year and they won't pay me rent. Well, RHA WA can help you with that. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Okay, our daily subscriber show poll. I don't know. I guess I expected it to be a little more even. You might think I'm crazy, but I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, is there any valid reason for a drag performance at a public school? Any valid reason? Nicole, is there any valid reason?
No, I just don't think it. I don't think it belongs in schools. I don't think. No, it's in a club in Seattle, in a club somewhere, yes. Wherever. I don't care, but not in a school.
You and 98% of our subscribers agree on that. I just tend to think, if I'm being ridiculous, although I don't know if it's if you're doing a school play and somebody dresses like a woman for the play, is that considered drag? You'd have to be very specific, because obviously, yes, that would be fine.
Yes. And I guess if you're doing a, you know, Shakespeare play,
and that, not
that
sexual.
Happened often.
Yes.
Yes. And if you're not sexual. Dressed in lingerie, yes, then okay. It's fine. But right. But no, I mean, if it's a sexually suggestive play, then get into a club. Yeah. Go to a club.
Like, wait till you're an adult and then you can knock go dress as Rocky Horror Picture Show and do weird stuff.
I do think that it's Rocky Horror Picture Show. Get over it. That I don't know so why weird. That makes it okay.
No.
I don't get it.
Like I said, I mean, what other movie then can we incorporate?
Yeah.
Hey, let's do Pulp Fiction and we can reenact the scene where the guy's, you know, raped, sexually assaulted in the basement, or with a ball gag in his mouth, or, you know, we can reenact the scene where he has to stab her in the chest because she's dying of a drug OD. Ugh. Like, what are we? It's the dumbest.
Wow, that went really ugly there.
Dumbest.
Well, even when it was a child's movie they were acting, we had that picture of one of them dressed as Ariel from The Little Mermaid.
Right.
It's still not okay because Ariel is a suggestive costume for a man to be wearing in front of children. It's still weird.
It's weird. It's all weird. And no, we're not going to excuse your, oh, but it's Rocky Horror Picture Show. Oh, okay. I'm sure the kids know what that is. Weirdos. Let's see some comments here on X. Server guy. Abso-freaking-lutely not. Nope. Todd Welch, a drag performance could be part of a broader age-appropriate curriculum on theater, performance art, cultural history for older students like high school. For example, a discussion of drag as a form of artistic expression in a drama or social studies class could include a performance to illustrate historical or cultural concepts such as gender roles in theater. He said there would have to be conditions, like the performance would be non-sexualized. Yes. I mean, you have to have ground rules, but then I go into this like, we can't have anything. So you just have to ban everything because they can't give a mouse a cookie. We talk about it all the time. Give a mouse a cookie and all of a sudden you got men dancing in lingerie in front of kids and doing a spready eagle. Philip Klum. The fact that this can be viewed as a serious, legitimate question indicates that we already have lost the majority of any moral standing we used to have. Unfortunately, I do have to ask it as a serious question, but you're right. Let's see here. Big Swan. It is perverts thrusting themselves into children's lives. It's wrong. Why a school would allow this group to do it there? I have to believe they hid their true intent to get it allowed on campus. I don't believe that. I think that the school probably, whenever you have a pride event, I think you can assume that there's going to be drag performers there. Yeah. I mean, when's the last pride event you saw without any drag performers? It's just hand in hand.
I've been to one recently, but
have you ever been to a drag show, Nicole? Because you're pretty straight laced.
Oh, I've been to a drag show.
Okay.
Yes,
gotcha.
No, a few, but not a ton of pride events, but yes, drag shows. Yes.
Stefan says, No, but ask me again once they bring in female erotic dancers. Then maybe he'd be like, yeah, yes, for the erotic dancers. No. Bob said, absolutely not. The people who embrace this nonsense are sick. Melissa said, if any type of drag was okay in school, why not have stripper poles and shows as well? There isn't any difference, in my opinion. Where does it stop? This has no place in the school for any reason. Mark says, stick to basics, reading, writing, arithmetic, especially when our test scores are in the cellar. I like that. Instead of in the toilet, they're in the cellar. They're even lower than the toilet. They're in the root cellar. I agree with you guys. I think in some theatrical performances, it's fine as long as it's non-sexualized. But first, you have to prove that you can do these things without getting carried away. Because right. That's the situation we're in right now, is we have gotten absolutely carried away. It's ridiculous.
And it's weird thing as far as renting out the space to just anybody. Because I know a lot of schools rent out their spaces to churches. And so it's kind of I don't know because church, that's pretty innocent.
There has to be some
guidelines there. I get it. You're kind of, it's nice to recoup some money there, I guess, but there has to be some guidelines.
Right. No
somehow.
Nudity. No semi-nudity. I mean, it's very simple.
Everything
this
has to be age appropriate.
Right.
Like, I mean, even if it's by the standards, it has to be G-rated. If it's by movie standards, G-rated, PG-rated.
It's unreal. I mean, you've got kids. What message does that send to students who have to go? Remember the hand check? I don't know if they still do it in schools, but like where you have to, we used to have to put our hands down by our side. You couldn't have shorts that were like booty shorts, mm-hmm. right?
Or
so
skirts.
It's mm-hmm. the girls can't have short skirts at school, which is appropriate, but you can have a dude in lingerie out in the parking lot. You know, putting his ankles to the sky. I just don't understand. It's weird. All right, let's get to other comments.
I don't know that they do have those rules anymore because, that's
racist.
Racist or, I don't know,
classist.
Something like that. Not fair. Sexist. I don't know.
All right, comments from the show today. Oh, bye, Nicole.
Are we going straight to comments now, Reed?
I figured you were going to stay. Okay. See you later.
I'll stick around.
All right. On Facebook, Michael Caldwell, it's all programming trying to make it normal. Right. But honestly, go to my Facebook page. Read how many comments there are trying to justify it and painting me as some like prude.
Because it's that movie.
Right. Because it's... No, they just need any reason to justify it. They would justify anything in the name of LGBTQ. It's a cult. It really is. Disheveled Angel says, be who you are, but please leave the kids out of it so they can decide who they are without the sexual perversion of others. Please. Good point. Yes. Mm-hmm. We don't care. I've never been anti-gay. I don't care. That's such a mainstream thing for people who are my age. It's not about that. And I worry about my gay friends having their rights obliterated because people took it too far and added on the TQIA+ exclamation point, and it's just getting ridiculous.
Like you said, why do you want people to see that much of your skin? Why is it necessary?
I don't even want
why to. Why do you insist on that?
We're inarguably better looking than that guy. we're very demure. Cal Stanford, that's all the left has. Fringe and shock. Actual governing is off the table. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Seattle Times on the ICE arrest data. Salty says, so they were arrested under the Biden admin, but were they deported? In this instance, I'm not sure. Because you'd have to follow each individual case through to actual deportation. Mm-hmm. And did they just come back in? I don't know. One of the differences that the Seattle Times points out is that now they're being held until deportation. When previously under Biden, ICE would arrest them, but then they might get released while they're pending proceedings and not actually held. And then you think that anything fell through. So I'm not saying Biden was harder than Trump, but the arrest numbers, the actual initial arrests during periods of the Biden administration were much higher than what we're seeing right now under President Donald Trump.
That's not true, even because the teacher got released last week.
Yeah.
So I think that's...
Well, I don't think it's happening in every instance. In a lot of cases in the Biden administration, people would be released into the interior of the country, sure. and then they'd have a court hearing like 7 years down the road. Right. They chalk that up as an ICE arrest. On Facebook, Stefan Myrell said, actually, the only platform principle the Dems have at this time is hypocrisy. Yeah, it's just orange man bad. Mm. Deanne, Biden probably had more deportation success because Washington wasn't blocking ICE efforts like they are now. I mean, I think they've always not cooperated since they've been a sanctuary jurisdiction, right? Mm-hmm. But they're not losing their mind. I mean, they're not surrounding ICE agents' vehicles, you know, and trying to hide immigrants in the federal courthouse.
There's not an so app that says, right, hey, there's a van right here.
Avoid ICE. Avoid ICE. Right now, they're doing everything they can to thwart ICE because it's become political. You're totally right. Then under the Biden administration, they weren't actively out there, the activists thwarting ICE. Mm-hmm. They just were looking the other way. They didn't care then. On lawmakers being able to delete their records, Sergeant Pickles, genuinely, they need to be charged with fraud and put in prison. $9 billion in new taxes and they can't afford to increase their cloud storage. I call bullshit. Yeah, right? It's weird. Let's see.
And it all came about because, like, they weren't the classes that they were going to have to train them on and how to delete their emails was going to be too much. So they just need to put it in this folder and set the auto delete.
Yeah.
Because the training for which ones to delete was going to be too much. So we just got to delete it all. No. And
real low bar for the state lawmakers. Real low bar. Bonita Peterson says this not only is wrong politically, but what if one of these members was arrested for a crime? A trail of evidence would be gone. Yeah, and it's just they work for us. So we should be able to vote on these things. Mm-hmm. Like when they get to change rules for themselves. No, we should be able to vote on this stuff. And people shouldn't have to sue over it. Robert Parker, $5 super chat. The vice chair of the 23rd Dems on mic and drag works for Sound Publishing. Interesting. So in the clip we played yesterday at the drag show, there was the drag performer on a mic saying they were the vice chair of the 23rd District Dems. He's saying they work for Sound Publishing. So maybe that's why the media is so hands off of these things, possibly. Brother Abe, we missed your super chat yesterday. Sorry about that. Would wear a mask for Nicole. Oh, that's nice.
We asked a question whether
I think Brother Abe's hot for you.
I know, fair.
Says Brandy, thanks. In a way, you're doing more for the kingdom of God than many believers in God do. Bless you. Oh, that's nice.
That's very sweet.
Wow. Okay. Maybe I don't have to go to church to help out the kingdom of God a little bit, you know?
There you go. Trying
to get back to family
values.
Might as well
score some points just in case, right, Brandy?
Just in case. Just in case, although I'm going to undermine that because our closing sanity check is about aliens. Nicole, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll get to that, what Tulsi Gabbard had to say about whether there's other beings out there in the universe. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. There's a lot of news out right now about the real estate market. There's a lot of listings. I mean, we haven't seen so many homes for sale in our neighborhood since the height of the pandemic. There's a ton. And they are taking a little bit longer to sell. But the good news is for home sellers that they're still selling for high prices. We've been really shocked by how much some of the homes in our neighborhood have been sold for. It's kind of making us want to list our home just so we can cash in, because I wish we'd done that kind of during the pandemic when people were trying to sell their home and they were for insane amounts of money. We should have sold it and moved into like a RV somewhere and just banked that cash. Anyway, Wes can help you navigate this real estate market that we're in right now, kind of give you a lay of the land with a free market analysis, help you understand how homes in your area are performing, what you can expect in terms of offers for your home, but also how long it might take to sell. So reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, ask him about his Listing Boost concierge service in case maybe you know you have some cosmetic upgrades that you need to make to your home. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, our sanity check on my personal favorite topic, aliens. Okay, DNI Director Tulsi Gabbard was doing an interview with the Pro Force One podcast, which is a podcast put out by the New York Post. And I'm so glad that they asked her about whether, since she's been DNI Director, she said, is that redundant? She's the Director of National Intelligence. So she's DNI, right? DNI director is redundant. Anyway, does Tulsi Gabbard have any evidence to point to the existence of extraterrestrials?
We've had some declassification of some very strange videos that look like they are, you know, unidentified flying objects. Is there anything in the files that you think you could find or have found?
Nothing that I'm prepared to talk about today.
Ooh. So watch this space.
Say what?
Watch this space.
We are I'm just going to say this.
Shifty.
Yeah, we're continuing to look for the truth and share that truth with the American people.
The truth is out there.
Yes, it is.
So do you believe that there could be aliens?
I honestly, like, my personal belief, yeah, I have my own views and opinions.
Right.
In this role, I got to be careful with with what I share.
Very interesting.
Awkward laugh. There's aliens, you guys. Clearly there's aliens. That has been our closing sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided and this week's episodes of Undivided. We will have a great edition of Sundays with Subscribers. We're going to talk to really a mom in her 50s in Portland who is out there covering Antifa. I said I was too old for that stuff. Man, but she's out there. She just got assaulted by Antifa. She has a whole story of what's been happening in Portland outside the ICE facility now there for the better part of 2 months. So join us for Sundays with Subscribers. If you're not a subscriber already, consider becoming one. You can watch our weekly episode of Sundays with Subscribers, participate in our daily show chats, our live subscriber Q&As, and just feel good at night. You know, go rest easy knowing that you're supporting independent news. Considering we have to do all the groundwork for the mainstream news anyway and help correct their stories for them. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. And while you're there, make sure you check our merch store. Get one of your Make Common Sense Great Again hats before they're gone. There's also some other stuff on there. So subscribers, we'll see you Sunday. The rest of you, we will see you Monday at noon.